When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode of Blue Shirts Breakaway is brought to you by you, the fans. That's right, go to patreon.com/blueshirtsbreakaway today to get access to our BSBOT episodes, our Discord, ad-free episodes, and much, much more. And you get the pride in knowing you support this stupid podcast about the New York Rangers all year long. Today we talk about the concerns, if there are concerns, about the New York Rangers. We talk about the game coming up Saturday night at 10:30, if you're still awake, versus the Kings with our dear friend Mr. Dooley, who is a Kings insider. And we answer a bunch of five-star questions. A lot to get to today, so it's one of those where we just can't come on the show and just say, hey, everything's fine, this team is so good. That is not today's show. There are some things to poke holes in, that's for sure. So without further ado, here's Mr. Mark Messier. Let's get to it. Here we go.
Hi, everybody. It's Mark Messier, and you're listening to Blue Shirts Breakaway, the number one Rangers podcast.
Welcome to the Let's try one more time. Hey, Bush Rebecca fans, welcome to the week of the Bushers Breakaway. I am your host, Ryan Mead. I'm here with my co-host, Greg Kapp, and I'll be leaving that in. Greg, how are you?
It's psychotic if anybody has ever listened to this podcast at 1.5 speed.
I sometimes accidentally listen to my shows at 1.2. My podcast app started recently doing this, like, hey, maybe you should listen at 1.2. It'd be easier for you. And it immediately sends like chills down my spine, and I hate it. Anybody who listens to this at 1.5 is a total psychopath. Total psychopath. Where do we start? Since we last left our heroes, they lost to the Blues 5-2. They lost to the Capitals when they were up 2-1 heading into the third. And then they found a way to win a game versus the Capitals without Alex Ovechkin for the second time to win 2-1. I think this is the first podcast where we can come on concerned. Look, there wasn't a loss. It's not like a Monday night recording where they lose and we somehow have to record when say everything's okay. I think there's cause for concern somewhere. There's some positives to talk about. There's some things to hang your hat on. But for the first time this year, I would say we won, and I wasn't like just joyous. I sweat out a loss on a 1 o'clock on a Sunday versus a win versus the Capitals, where it just shouldn't have been as hard as it was. But I hate to come out of here, Greg, and say, hey, the kudos to Charlie Lindgren, because he was insane, but we've just been getting goalie for the past 3 weeks.
I'm still not saying concerned. It's still not the right word. It's concerned would say that I don't have confidence in something turning around, or that this is an indication that things aren't good, or if it's just a rut. I'm still in the it's just a rut camp. It's frustrating. I'll give you frustrating, but concerned, no. Concerned would mean that I fear the Rangers could fall out of a playoff spot, which they're not going to. Concerned would mean I don't think the Rangers could win a playoff series, which, here we go.
Ah, here it is. It's like the Slack noise from back in the day.
People are going to have to live with this for an OT, too. I got one more episode we got to record on this.
They'll be fine. Some people are clapping in their car right now.
People are also checking their phones, wondering if it happened to them.
For those who don't know, Greg is recording on a laptop, and his text, which he doesn't know how to turn off, go through the computer. So there you go.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I love having the MacBook for exactly that. It's so much easier to respond to work texts when I'm already doing work on my computer. But I didn't want to fly with two laptops, Ryan. Just
tell my embarrassing story real quick?
Sure.
I work in sales, you know, so I text a lot of people. It's kind of what I do all day. And I was prepping for a meeting, and it was just like, hey, here's what's going to happen on the meeting. You know, this is our position. This is their position. No big deal. Normal thing. I have a great relationship with everybody involved in this. I sent that text to the person on my was supposed to go to my team to the other person, the client. And probably like I know everybody on an iPhone. You could just delete it, right? I don't have one of those. So
yeah, that's on you, big guy.
Yeah, it was back to like when I was on Tinder.
You grew up in a broken household, so you have the green blob as opposed to the blue blob.
I have a Google Pixel. I really enjoy it. Turns out, cannot delete text. So that was an awkward moment. Everything's fine. But it's just like one of those moments I wanted to just jump out of a window and never come back.
Yeah.
Worst. Terrible. Can I read you this one of the stats that does concern me?
Okay.
This is from Shane Bullen. He's been properly tracking this stack all season long in my replies. I really appreciate it, actually. 12 of our 15 losses, 80%, our opposition has scored 2 goals within 4 minutes. 9 of our 15 losses, 60%, our opposition has scored 2 goals within 2 minutes. And 17 of 41 overall games, 41%, our opposition has scored 2 goals within 4 minutes. Do you see that as a trend, or is that just a total coincidence and we're just making too much out of it?
I would tend to think it's coincidence, but I don't know. It's hard with that, where what is a proper sample size versus what isn't a proper sample size. Does it mean the Rangers are completely letting the air out of the balloon when they allow one goal? I would like to think not, but I can't think of a moment off the top of my head where I feel like I just think that's just happenstance.
There's cause for concern for me, where it's like this momentarily just shit, what the hell is happening? And chaos doesn't, order doesn't come back quicker than chaos. And I just wonder, it's just a simple fix. Hockey timeouts are mostly useless. Just call a timeout. One time. Just one time. Call a timeout after they score a goal. 2-3 games. Get everything together. I know they rerouted. Not rerouted. They got things together versus the Capitals after they scored. They didn't score again. Obviously, Igor was phenomenal in that game. I wouldn't say it was an all-time performance like him, but he did what he was supposed to do. Stop big goal shots and goals all game. I just think this is something simple that Laviolette can do to kind of control the pace of the game. I know not coaches don't do this. This isn't part of it. You got to be mentally tough. You got to practice it. You have all these things you practice for to stay in order, to stay in formation, to keep the defense sound, which was much, much better with Kapokako, which I'm sure we'll get to in a couple minutes here. It's just a little thing that Laviolette might be able to do to kind of cure this little nuance that's been happening to the Rangers all season long.
Maybe. I don't know.
Is it weird? Is it weird to request that?
I agree with you that I think timeouts are overvalued in hockey. I don't think there's any reason to save them for a situation that may happen in the third period or may not happen in the third period. I just feel like coaches don't like using them before the third unless something super dramatic is happening early.
Do you ever play like Pokemon or video games where you're like, I'm going to need all these potions one day? I absolutely need these potions.
Growing up, Ryan. I never played
them. Oh, sorry. Okay. My apologies. There's a lot of these games where you like collect all these items and you're like, one day I'll use this. And then you finish the game. You're like, I still have all this shit. Why didn't I use any of it? That is what Laviolette and timeouts are. Not for all coaches, not just Laviolette.
It's every not coach. Laviolette problem. It's every NHL coach.
It's every coach. I'm with you. It's like, I might need this one day. Like, the game's over. Oh, yeah.
what's the saying? You can't take them home with you, right?
Yeah, you can't take the money with you. That's it.
Is it true if you don't use it, you lose it?
I think that's a fact.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I agree with you. I would like to see teams, you'd be more aggressive with their timeouts. I just think we're asking for too much in that regard.
Kapokako makes his return. Mm-hmm. Did not play versus the Blues, did not play versus the Capitals the first game. Mika Zibanejad also sick. Supposedly, and this is not confirmed, the RSV, the flu is going around everywhere in the NHL currently. I know the Leafs were going through it a couple weeks ago. Mika had it pretty bad. I'd imagine others on the team are fighting it off or fighting through it. Unreported, of course, at this point. But Kapokako returns on Sunday. I thought he looked pretty good. Just generally was more physical and aggressive than I kind of expected him to be, coming off what I thought would be a guaranteed season-ending injury. Sort of shocked he's back as soon as he is. Vince mentioned that he could be back mid-January on our podcast a couple weeks ago. He was dead on with that information. Here he is. And he really solidifies that top line. Look, I know the Capitals are obviously they beat the Rangers on Saturday. And they're not exactly a great team right now, especially with Alex Ovechkin out, even though Alex Ovechkin is having not exactly the best year as well. They just look a lot more defensively sound with Kapokako on that top line. The team in general has a little bit more control. And he's going to have these next, I don't know, 6 weeks. When is the trade deadline? Sometime in March, maybe 6 to 8 weeks from now. I actually don't know when it is. Up until that point, Kako is going to have run on this top line. And he'll have he'll just have all the chance in the world to make the most of it. And so far, obviously the 3 points, you want a lot more. I get it. But the value he creates for that top line, who is not exactly playing at their best right now, it's really, really hard to understate that. From Rangers Muse, the Rangers this season, when they play with Kako, are 16-3-1. When they don't play, they're 11-10-1. So, look, that's not correlation proof causation. It is just a fact. It's just a fact.
Trade deadline, March 8th.
Okay. So, 7 weeks. He'll have 7 weeks.
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought he looked phenomenal. The team just feels more balanced when he's out there, where you're not asking role players to be more than what they are. It's allowing Will Cooley, who is playing well, to play with more favorable matchups. You're not relying on Blake Wheeler nearly as much as you used to. You're not relying on Nick Bonino as much as you were used
to. Nick Bonino demoted to the fourth line in that game.
I mean, he's been bad.
You
want to talk about guys I'm actually concerned about? We made this point, I think, last week where...
I believe it was OT.
Was it OT?
Yeah.
Yeah, my biggest point with Nick Bonino is I really, really don't believe he was brought in here to be an 82-game player. I don't think that was the plan. I think the plan was to get a good 65 out of him and have him fresh and ready for playoff assignments. And I simply think you can see he's wearing down, or should I say worn down. He just looks like a man that needs to be a 13th forward for a nice 3-week stretch to get that mojo going. And the only way the Rangers could do that is if they get healthier. And Kako is definitely one step forward towards them getting healthy. I know the final score was 2-1, and I hate doing this because the scoreboard is the ultimate truth teller in all sports, but the Rangers probably should have had 5 on Sunday against the Capitals. Lafreniere was electric. Kako had a couple of golden moments that were robbed. Trocheck had a couple of golden moments that were robbed. Zibanejad missed a couple of empty nets on the power play. I'm getting tired. I asked this on Twitter, Ryan. Has there ever been a more Jekyll and Hyde superstar in New York than Mika Zibanejad?
I can't really think of one.
He has two settings.
Can I actually say the only other player we've ever said this about?
Chris Kreider.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. But Kreider's kind of settled in, or at least we know what to expect from Kreider. So I don't feel like the lows with Kreider. Zibanejad, when he's off, he tanks the entire top power play unit.
Dude, I hate to focus on just one moment of a game, but that power play, and I know you probably know what I'm talking about here, where he just makes the pass outside of the zone. You're like, Mika, are you okay, bud? what's going on? When he's hot, he's unstoppable. My man Supernova. Can't stop scoring goals.
Supernova.
When he's ice again right now. And again, he was hot just like 4 or 5 games ago, 16 points, 9 games, just couldn't stop. He's as cold can be right now.
And this isn't people saying, well, you got to give him a break. He just came back from an illness. This back-to-back. He was cold the 5 games before he came out of the lineup too.
Absolutely.
And I got to say this. I'm finding myself more and more annoyed. This happens every now and then where God loves Sam and Joe. And we both do. They're wonderful. They pump up Mika Zibanejad's two-way game so much that I think people have come to believe that Mika Zibanejad is this great shut down forward.
He's an average defenseman, and that's totally fine.
And that's totally fine. But when I, like, the people that were defending Mika in my replies were all like, well, he's a Selke level defender, even if he's not scoring.
No, he is not. He is an elite penalty kill guy. Sure.
But
I'll give you that.
And the thing that makes him great on the penalty kill is not his defensive play,
it's
that
the transition
he's an offensive
game.
Player. That can take the puck and keep you from having the puck.
His transition game with Chris Kreider on the penalty kill is elite. It's one of the best in the game, period.
Yes. It's what Shannon would call a power kill.
He's not a shutdown defender.
No. And, you know, people all hate Barclay Goodrow. The one thing Barclay Goodrow does well, kill penalties in the traditional defensive sense. Mika Zibanejad is an offensive penalty killer, which I like. And I like that's in the game. But we need to stop treating Mika Zibanejad like he's this defensive god. And I do think this started with Sam and Joe simply saying, oh, look at the defensive play by Mika Zibanejad. He makes good plays. He's an average defender.
It's not only that. I don't know why these quotes stick out in my head. I don't know. Do you remember when Gallant was telling Hedl to model his game more about Mika Zibanejad? And Gallant's quote exactly was, "This is now look at that's a two-way player that plays both ways of the ice perfectly." It's like, oh, okay, well, that's not true. my man has a incredibly heavy shot. He's becomes an absolute supernova, but he's never been a shutdown defenseman and has been exposed by multiple great centers in this league a lot. And that's not a problem. This is not me shitting on Mika Zibanejad.
And it's also not a problem when he's playing next to someone like Kapokako, who is a legitimate shutdown defenseman.
Legitimate. Forward. I will say to give some other people that do work at MSG a little bit more credit, I was listening to the radio call probably like half a game on Saturday. Dave Maloney's just going in. Yep. My man text. My man is just going in on Chris Kreider. Like, his game is off right now. He can't make the pass out of the zone. He's just picking him apart. And I know Maloney's not under the scrutiny that the broadcast crew maybe is, but my dude, Maloney was just going in on Mika and Kreider, and I couldn't believe it. But it also, he made a lot of great points where they're just, their game's not clicking right now. Everything seems clunky, and they need just a winger that's going to solidify them. And I'm hoping that person is Kapokako.
I know, but on the power play, because, you know, I focus on the power play for obvious.
Over five.
It's not that power play one is broken. It's just that I don't think we realize how important Mika Zibanejad is to the power play until Mika goes so cold that he's a liability on the power play. Because Fox and Panarin as your rovers who get to skate around the zone and create space with their passing and their skating, that only works if the defense they are playing against is forced to pay attention to where Mika Zibanejad is and almost play 4-on-3 as opposed to 5-on-4. But when Zibanejad, because Zibanejad also goes through these periods where not only is his shot off, he knows his shot off, so he tries to pass more, and it's almost like he presses on his passes. Every time this happens, I say one thing, and that's I want Mika Zibanejad to shoot the puck more, because the only way to get out of a slump is to shoot your way through it.
Keep
stop
shooting.
Overthinking it. Just put pucks on net. That'd be great. But he's in a rut right now where he seemingly doesn't know what to do on the power play. And I'm not advocating for breaking up power play one. You would just hope that Laviolette would notice that in game and be like, you know what I'm going to do? Alexi Lafreniere, you're out there.
This is kind of where I was going, Greg.
Yeah.
I'll let you finish. Sorry.
Yeah. It's just, I wish sometimes. This Gallant used to do the thing where if the Rangers had a lead late and they had a power play and they were up multiple goals, he would reward people with power play time at the end of the game. The one thing I wish Laviolette would do is it was clear yesterday that Zibanejad just didn't have it. This happens to everybody. Gerrit Cole doesn't go 7 innings every game. I wish he realized that Zibanejad didn't have it and Lafreniere was on a heater, drew 3 penalties.
He looked amazing.
Fed up Taco for what should have been a goal. Play one of his best all-around games of the entire season. I wish the coaching staff would see that and go, I think we should get Lafreniere out there for top power play minutes real quick.
So to defend them, at least to give them the logic, it's if we take Mika Zibanejad off here, we don't want to kill his confidence more than it's already killed. And we've had the number one power play in the league all year long. It ebbs and flows sort of situation, and we need to find a way to get this back to what it needs to be the rest of the season. I'm with you, though. I would have put Lafreniere up there because the one time we got to see him on power play one this season when Mika Zibanejad was hurt, things looked dynamic. They were flowing. And he just adds another level to that power play that wasn't there before. Look, Mika Zibanejad has a shot that is unmatched. There's very few people in the league that can do what Mika Zibanejad does with his shot. Lafreniere adds a little bit more of a rover, a little more of a flow to the power play. And I think I'm not advocating for him to replace Mika at all. I just think you're right. The way he was playing yesterday, he was as hot as it could get, and you needed to put him up there.
Yeah, again, it's not a full-time replacement. I just want my coach to be able to read the room and know to kind of push the hot hand when you have the hot hand. And it becomes a fascinating unit with Lafreniere over Zibanejad, where you go from having – it empowers Panarin to shoot more. And with the season that Panarin is having, I think you want him to shoot more, where – it does feel like at times the power play becomes a little too Mika reliant. And it feels like everything is eventually either setting up Kreider for a tip or Zibanejad for a one timer. And if you take Zibanejad off that line, all of a sudden you have 3 playmakers being able to have carte blanche do what they want with Fox, Lafreniere, and Panarin. And Panarin feels more responsible for the shot taking. And all that is a good, this is one of those good problems to have, Ryan, where yep. I am complaining that
Dex,
stop fucking texting me.
Ah! it doesn't happen on the interview, so that's good.
Okay, right. We did that early enough in the morning where I don't think anyone was awake on a Sunday.
Yeah,
this is a good problem to have, Ryan, where my occasional supernova number one center is struggling. Shut up.
Shit.
Yeah, anyway, good problem to have. I'm not even going to explain it anymore. I don't know where I am.
I just didn't know you were in the groove, and then we end it there. It's, you're right. I will give Laviolette credit, though. He does have this potential to say, I know where we are in the game. I need to play the hot hand in Artemi Panarin. Double shifts there. We'll play certain defensive pairings. I know, it's okay. We'll play certain defensive pairings during. He does a lot right in that way, but just the power play. Lafreniere was not given that opportunity. Otherwise, I would say I'm still not. This team is making me sweat. Like, you're right. I'm not concerned. Do I think they'll miss the playoffs at any chance? I think that 0%. Still believe in this team. Still believe in the talent. Happy they're getting healthy. And even better news from Larry Brooks today. And a couple of our friends have been following this very closely as well. Filip Hedl has been posting video after video after video of him working out. And today he was working out with Jaromír Jágr. So it looks like he's going to be coming back this season. Again, the head is a whole different situation. We don't know. But at least there's a lot of positive working out going on right now. So we still have 8 weeks to the deadline, 7 weeks. So we'll see what's going to happen with Hedl very soon.
Two things. One, I know he isn't, but you'd kind of take Jágr over Wheeler at this point, right?
That's not a question.
I know he's not actually better than Wheeler. It would just be more enjoyable.
I would have a great time. We all would.
Two, on the Hedl front, I was thinking about this today. Speaking of Mika Zibanejad, remember when we were worried about all the concussions Mika Zibanejad has had in his career?
Chris Kreider almost was out of the league from blood issues.
Yeah. All I'm saying is these things, they come and they go.
They do. I wish the best for Hedl, and I hope he's back very soon, but only if he can. I do also want to wish the best for Jacob Trouba and his family. They had their first child today. Congratulations. They named him Axel, which is
Maddie Jets on that one.
Related to trains. So there you go. That's pretty funny.
That child is a locomotive.
That's for sure. Any other particular things we want to get to before the show? We're going to be previewing the Kings game on Saturday with a friend of ours, Mr. Dooley. There's just been a lot of weird stuff that happened in these last couple losses that have just been strange and unsettling. For the most part, goalies just being incredible.
I know, it's so lame.
Binnington was unbelievable,
dude,
versus
Lindy
the Rangers.
Was incredible.
Was it? I forget to see the stat, but it was like 7 expected goals for the New York Rangers or something like that against Binnington.
That was against Binnington.
It was like, what, 7? This guy fucking destroyed us. And Jordan Kyrou obviously
had
the night of the game.
Against Binnington without Mika, Kako, Hedl, and Pitlake in the lineup.
Yep.
They were playing 11-7, and they had an XG of 6.55, I think.
It's like, what? Yeah. How did we not win this game?
It's so lame to come on a podcast and just blame the 4-game losing streak and the losses in, I think, 5 of 7 or
it's
whatever.
Like the lowest form of commentary.
Yeah. At the same time,
there's some more
the
truth.
The goalies have been playing incredible against the New York Rangers. Like, go back to the Canucks game. Thatcher Demko was on one.
I was listening to the NHL Network. Kevin Weeks was going off on Charlie Lindgren. He was like, oh my God, look at that save. And I was like, yeah, Kevin, I fucking get it. He's awesome right now. I don't know what else to do. He's been just making these unbelievable windmill saves left and right. His glove hand was perfect all night long. It's like, okay, cool. Well, what are we supposed to do against something like that? And then obviously the Rangers let up 2 on Saturday. Find a way to win on Sunday, but it's just, wow. Unbelievable performance from these guys.
I know. And then even Saturday, was it Saturday that Kreider, or was it the Blues or Saturday when Kreider went one post then the other post?
Saturday he went left post, right post. No, it was the Blues. It was the Blues.
The Blues where he took the stroll down the locker room?
Yeah, and screamed into the void. He did left post, right post, and then I believe, again, he also was robbed right in front of Charlie Lindgren, where he just said, God damn it, like, very loudly.
It's not – blame the Rangers for being unable to finish, but sometimes the goalie is just stupid.
One other thing that I thought was interesting, the Rangers had 40 shots in 3-plus games, lost all of them. And then versus the Capitals decided shots are for losers and probably took, I think, like under 30 both games. Very weird.
I do wonder if the emphasis against the Capitals was just to play better defensively, though.
It does seem like Laviolette said, don't take the risk you were taking before. Let's not go up and down the ice and let's just shut this shit down.
Yeah, because that first period Sunday against the Capitals, I said this, the two takeaways were Alexis Lafreniere is here, and then it felt like the best defensive period the Rangers have played in 2 weeks.
Kako changes the dynamic of this team. I know people are like, he's got 3 points, second overall pick. I hear you guys. Trust me, I hear you. But there's something about his defensive prowess and the way he controls on the boards that really, really helps. I don't know if he's a great fit for Mika and Kreider, but he's a good player to have for $2 million on this team.
But also, the expectation I have for Cabo Kako, this is kind of like when you have a really good batting lineup. I don't care if my 7-hitter isn't hitting 20 homers a year. Go down the list. He's not more important than Mika Zibanejad, Chris Kreider, Artemi Panarin, Vincent Trocheck, Alexi Lafreniere. So he's at best their sixth most important scoring forward. I wouldn't put him more important than Adam Fox. I wouldn't put him more important than Eric Gustafson. So maybe he's my eighth best scoring player.
Miller might be more important than him, and Hedl's definitely more important when he's on.
Yeah, so I get it. I want everyone on my team to score, but God, if my six hitter is just this gold glove winning shortstop that's going to hit 280, I'm cool with it, Ryan. He's not hurting me offensively.
No, he's not. And it's going to come for him. It really is. It's there. He has the game.
The point is, it doesn't have to. As long as he's playing like this, he's going to be fine.
He's worth it. He's worth every penny you pay him. Uh-huh. Every single penny. He produces that. Not in points, but in everything else. Everything else. He's not an intangible guy, Goodrow. Thank you. Are we still protecting Goodrow this year? I don't know.
He's been right on the penalty kill. Everyone that says he doesn't do anything.
He does something. That's for sure.
Again, two things can be true simultaneous. Barclay Goodrow's contract stinks. Guy's a useful hockey player.
Stats don't matter with him. I'm kind of with you at some points where he is a black hole at points when he gets the puck. He's the NHL Network was saying he's looking for a goal. He hasn't really scored. Again, that's not, you just made the point about Cabo Kako. That's not why you have Barclay Goodrow.
And the crazy thing is, over the last couple of weeks, I would say the second best offensive line the Rangers have had, it hasn't equaled in goals, but they've been the most impactful in the offensive zone, has been the shutdown line of whatever line Goodrow and VC is on.
Yeah.
That line's been great in the offensive zone. They're not scoring, but they are impacting play and keeping the puck out of the Rangers' end.
Let's go to our interview. We'll be doing some Kings preview. So we'll go to that. We'll come back with five-star questions. Transition. Bet the action on the ice with DraftKings Sportsbook. You can get the over 6 at plus 105 for Kraken Rangers on Tuesday. Download the app now and use code BSB. New customers get $150 instantly in bonus bets for betting just $5 on hockey. That's code BSB. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. The crown is yours. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after insurance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-46-739. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21+. Age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 180 hours after assurance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligibility for deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gambling resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright NHL 2023. All rights reserved. Ayo, this podcast is brought to you by TickPick. TickPick is the official sponsor of Blue Shirts Breakaway all season long. And we're actually going to be hosting a meetup game sponsored by TickPick February 24th, Flyers Devils in Philly. I'm going to be hosting that. We're going to post the poster sometime this week. So TickPick meetup in Philly. If you want to go, you could use code BLUESHIRTS15 to get $15 off your order over $99. Best part about TickPick, the price sees the price you get. I actually saw a TickPick commercial on NHL Network this weekend. We're original supporters of TickPick, and they're getting so big they're on the network. From there, the commercial's pretty funny. It's about a couple ladies golfing, and she goes, "Oh, TickPick," and the other lady goes, "What?" Yeah, you get it. You get it. TickPick, the best place to get your tickets. No fees. The price you see, the price you get. They even do deal scores. And if you want to get tickets to a Rangers game or any other event, use promo code BLUESHIRTS15 at checkout. That's BLUESHIRTS15 at checkout to get $15 off any order over $99. We love the folks at TickPick. Go use them. TickPick. Love you guys. Hey, we're back with our first and only guest of the day. We have Zach Dooley. He is an LA Kings insider, the best there is. Zach, how are you?
Fellas, doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Because I'm on the team, the Rangers are playing the Kings at 10:30 p.m. Eastern next Saturday. We like to do a couple team previews throughout the year. The Kings notoriously have beaten the Rangers in the finals. Everyone, really, the Rangers are still pretty salty about it. A lot of Ranger fans. The Rangers now have Jonathan Quick, who had a renaissance of a year so far, and has taken a little bit of a nosedive since, but things are still good on his end. Where do we even start between the two teams? What has been the reaction from, I guess, Kings fans? Do people even think about Quick anymore? And what was their reaction when he did end up beating the Kings?
It was probably the most bittersweet loss ever, right? And the Kings at that point in the year hadn't lost on the road in regulation. So it was almost at first like, of course it was Quick. Like, of course it was Quick who beats them after what happened last year. But then from there on, this is a guy who's a Mount Rushmore when it's all said and done for the Kings. He'll be a jersey retired, probably a statue out front of the building. One of the best players in Kings history. I don't think there's anyone here who isn't rooting for Jonathan Quick. The fact that he's in the Eastern Conference now, I think it makes it a lot easier for Kings fans than last year when they were like, do we really want the Vegas Golden Knights to win the Stanley Cup just for Jonathan Quick? I think now it's like, all right, we want this guy to do really well because he's meant everything to the Kings franchise.
Zach, we're dealing with two hockey teams here going through the skids. We're recording this Sunday before the Rangers play the Capitals on the second half of back-to-back and before the Kings play the Hurricanes on Monday night. So things are subject to change, but both these teams are going through the skids. Ranger fans not handling it well. How are West Coast LA fans doing with this lull in this point of the season for the Kings?
Well, I'll tell you what, Greg, they are not handling it well out here either. It has been similar sledding, I think, for both clubs here. Last night on the plane was kind of like a ignore the mentions kind of flight. Maybe that's where you guys are at too right now. It's 8 straight for the Kings as of this recording. 4 of those have been in overtime, so there's a couple of points in there. But as you guys know, that doesn't seem to tone things down at all. So Kings fans are in one. We're all in one right now. It's where the season's at. But yeah, it certainly hasn't been a positive reaction.
I have not watched a lot of Kings games this year, as I do not stay up for them. But Quinton Byfield notoriously taken second overall after Alexi Lafreniere. Alexi Lafreniere very covered by the NHL. 3 goals in his last like 19 games or whatever it is. I'm looking at dailyfaceoff.com right now, and it says that Quinton Byfield is the top line left wing. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah, we actually start games at 10:30, so 7:30 local, specifically to mess with East Coast podcasters. I don't want you guys to watch our games.
It works.
Yeah.
So what happened? Because Quinton, for me, at least, was a bona fide center. I know he's had a hell of a start to the year. He was breaking out in a lot of ways. He's still in the first line. What was the decision to make him a winger at this point?
So about a year ago, the Kings made an in-game adjustment. It was in Colorado. I remember it well. Quinton was centering the fourth line. They moved him up with Kopitar and Kempe, LW1, and he's never left. So at first last year, he was kind of the complimentary piece on that line. Like Kopitar's Kopitar, Kempe's Kempe. Byfield did all that dirty work that gets no credit, but gets a lot of credit amongst his teammates and his line mates. Enter this year, the Kings acquire Pierre-Luc Dubois, who is a center. They already have Philippe Deneau, who is a center, and they obviously have Kopitar. And Byfield proved to be such a good fit with Kopitar and Kempe that was a line that the Kings decided to keep together. It's a line that has a lot of chemistry, a line that's produced pretty well. And I think in the long run, there's definitely still a chance Quinton could be a center. He has a lot of the traits that would make a pretty effective center. But for the team right now, he's been on the wing. He's really embraced that. And because of the depth the Kings have, it's allowed him to play a lot higher in the lineup, play a lot more minutes. And the production, as you can see, I think reflects that.
Zach, let's talk about the good before we talk about the bad. You mentioned Anze Kopitar, who kind of hangs over Rangers fans as his haunting lore the longer he goes in his career. I have a working theory on Kopitar that he is the NHL equivalent of Adrian Beltre, this all-time great player that we just, for some reason, don't talk about very often.
That's probably true, right? Like, he's just been good, really good for so long. And it's kind of funny, like, we always talk about his two-way game because he wins the Selkies. He's a defensive-minded center who's also good offensively. And then you forget, like, this dude's approaching 1,200 career points. And he plays those 10-30 starts, so a lot of people don't see him maybe as regularly. And the, you know, the Western Coast teams aren't quite the TV draw that the East Coast teams are for the NHL. So there's not a ton of visibility for him. But this is a guy who, in the 2023 calendar year, had his second most productive calendar year of his entire career. And he's 36. Like, he was over a point per game in the 2023 calendar year. He's ageless. You keep waiting, like, is this guy ever going to slow down? And the answer so far has been no.
I legitimately couldn't tell you how old he was before you said that. I was trying to guess in my head. I was like, maybe he's 39. He could have been that. But it's just, he does seem ageless. Is there other, I know you said things are in the rut right now. Are there other positives to take away that we're not talking about that we should be?
King's penalty kill has been very good. Maybe the number one question mark, you know what's funny actually is it probably the two biggest question marks externally have been two of the team's biggest strengths. The penalty kill was under 50% against the Oilers in the playoffs last year, and the Kings revamped the system. They've come out and they've been one of the best in the NHL. At one point they were leading the league. I think they're still up towards, you know, the top three, top five. The penalty kill has been excellent. And then goaltending, like, the Kings signed Cam Talbot to a 1-year deal. You guys know Cam Talbot from
very well,
however many teams and years ago. He is an NHL All-Star. He's the Kings representative, top five in the league in save percentage, goals against average. Once you factor out the guys who've only played a couple games, at least as of before last night, and on a $1 million 1-year deal, like, that dude's been outstanding. So it's kind of funny is, two of the biggest positives for me, even through the losses, have been what were at the beginning of the year like, oh, this is what's going to hurt the Kings. It's actually been kind of what's carried the Kings.
You brought up the All-Star game, and this is an easy topic for us to all dunk on if we want to, and no one gets in trouble here. Can we just do away with fan voting? What the shit?
Do away with it.
I don't care about the Canucks and the Maple Leafs. I'm not watching this All-Star game.
I want to watch the Canucks and the Maple Leafs just play head-to-head. Let's have a four-team tournament. One team is the Canucks. One team is the Maple Leafs. And then one team will be like half of the Edmonton Oilers and a few other guys. And then, I don't know.
Congratulations, maybe, you made the World Cup. Like, you just discovered what we're doing in the World Cup. So it's four teams.
Yep, four teams. And the fourth team will be fans that get to play because nobody wants to go anyway. Nobody wants to go anyway. So, like, what are we doing?
There should be fans that we, the fans, vote on. So fans that we want to see get hit the most.
This sounds awesome, especially because if you look at a lot of the interviews, I mean, I'm sure you saw the Seth Jarvis interview where he's like, I'm going to Mexico. Like, please do not vote for me. I do not want to be there.
Like, it's amazing. Cool for some guys, right? Like, maybe your first time. And then after that, it's like, this is just a straight up cash grab for the NHL. Let's do away with it and not have there be 17 Vancouver Canucks.
Igor Shesterkin is going from the New York Rangers. He is the representative. I will tell you that he has not had the good year he's usually had. A large amount of fans have yelled about him in my mentions for a very long time. And for him to be the representative over, say, like a Vincent Trocheck or someone else that has had a better year than him is very strange. The last thing I want as a fan is Igor Shesterkin going to this event. That man needs time off and to rest. And I can't think of anything else that's the worst for him. Let's go back to what the bad is. There are two players that kind of have like loose ties to the New York Rangers and Pierre-Luc Dubois and Deneau. Both were rumored targets for the New York Rangers over the past couple years. Deneau especially, they kind of stayed away. I think they were worried about the offense. and if it would ever actually appear. I know he's a great defensive center. And then Pierre-Luc Dubois, I cannot tell you how many articles were written by Larry Brooks or other people that write about the Rangers saying this might be the next target. The Kings go and get the Pierre-Luc Dubois. And then from there, he's been on the fourth line. He's been on the third line. There's been a lot of, he's not performing. He kind of, forced his way out of the Jets, but didn't seem like he really wanted to stay there either. So what has been the story around those two?
So I think we'll start with Phil Deneau, because I don't consider much there to be negative at all. Phil Deneau has been, he's the do-it-all guy, right? He's not going to be an 80-point player, but he's probably more like a 50 to 60-point guy who kills penalties. He's a leader in the room. He does all those, like, when it was Chris Drury? It was like, he does the intangibles, right? He's got all the intangibles, and everyone's like kind of rolls their eyes, but he has all the intangibles. Like, he's that kind of guy. The offense has been, I think, right around on that pace this year. I think he's about 25 from 40 in terms of points. So he's been pretty good. He has a really good, chemistry with Trevor Moore and Kevin Fiala on the team's second line. That's been maybe the Kings' best line throughout this slump. Those guys have produced and played extremely well. So, Phil Deneau has been kind of as advertised for the Kings. Dubois, the production obviously hasn't been there, right? There was a plan coming in, which was to pair Dubois with Kevin Fiala. It would give the Kings three scoring lines that could ideally match up with any team in the NHL. The Dubois-Fiala pairing just didn't work. For whatever reason, those two guys did not click. They didn't play together as expected. Fiala got the bump to Deneau and Moore's line, and Dubois kind of had a rotating cast of characters on his line, a lot of younger players, some guys who are maybe playing up in the lineup, and he just hasn't quite found his footing yet. And there's maybe some similarities to the first time he was traded from Columbus to Winnipeg, where that first year he had a lot of trouble adjusting in Winnipeg. He said as much when I talked to him maybe about a couple weeks ago, was, he felt some similarities where he had a lot of trouble that first year, and then he eventually did put it together in the second year. So I think it's a little soon to say, like, this is a bust, this is a wash. But it's still fair to expect more from a guy who cost a lot to acquire and, got a pretty big contract.
It also doesn't help that the pieces that were sent to Winnipeg have seemed to make an immediate impact there for a team that, frankly, has far exceeded all the expectations I think any of us realistically had for Winnipeg. I mean, 60 points to the number two team in the Western Conference. Speaking of expectations, Zach, when this season started, I think I considered the Kings one of the eight best teams in the Western Conference. I would have been surprised if you guys didn't make the playoffs. You're middle of the pack right now. You obviously are coming off a bit of a hot start to the season like the Rangers had. What exactly are the expectations moving forward for the Kings? What would be considered a down year in the Kings' eyes?
I think that the Kings are at a place where you can't write off a first-round exit anymore. And obviously you said it, right? Like, there was a time when I think the Kings were a clear playoff lock. The eight-game losing streak has brought them from clear of the pack to kind of the front of the pack, which certainly changes things. But the last 2 years, the Kings have played the Edmonton Oilers in round one, and they've lost in six and they've lost in seven. 2 years ago, no one expected the Kings to make the playoffs. Whatever happened in that series basically didn't matter. It was gravy. Last year, the Kings played the Oilers much tighter in that series, still lost. And you said, okay, now this is no longer, I think, acceptable. And then you get into this year and the expectations are even higher. So I think that, so you can't win a playoff series until you make the playoffs, right? So the Kings have to make the playoffs. That's step one. But I don't think anymore you can build in those same excuses that maybe were had over the last 2 years in the first round. So the Kings have to find a way to make some noise in the playoffs. I think that's the next step for this group.
We talked at the beginning of this little interview here that Kings fans were probably freaking out, rightfully so, for losing eight in a row. But in the replies and in the mentions you do see, are a lot of them mentioning that the Oilers have won 10 and the Kraken have won 9?
I think they're so in their own bubble here that it hasn't really come up. But all of a sudden, the Kings have lost eight in a row. those streaks have happened, and suddenly, 10 to 20 point gap has become one.
It's one for both teams. And
yeah,
Kings do have three games in hand on the Kraken, to be fair. That is not nothing. But to be one back of the Oilers, when especially how the Oilers started, is tough.
Yeah, I mean, tables have turned, right? So, yeah, I think it's in the back of everyone's mind. I think that right now the hysteria is mostly about what's going on with the Kings. But kind of like what Greg said with the, you know, the Dubois trade, it certainly doesn't help that the other side of it is doing so well either.
I'm looking at the standings right now, and this is reason number 7,000 why I hate the 2-1-0 ranking. This isn't a knock on the Kings, Zach. I don't mean this to be. But the Oilers have won more games than the Kings, 23-20. They have lost fewer games than the Kings, 16-19, and they find themselves a point behind the Kings. That's lunacy to me. I don't understand how we allow this to happen every year.
Look, if I could make one change to the NHL, even if it might hurt the Kings this particular season, it would be a 3-2-1 point system. I think it's the fairest way to award points. And I don't know, at the end of the day, a lot of times it probably doesn't impact the final standings too much, but yeah, like that's what it should be, right? It should be, if you win in regulation, you get rewarded more for winning in a skills competition or, you know, a barely level of play in 3-on-3.
As we talked about earlier, the Western Conference is tough for ye olde Eastern podcasters. And we don't get to watch a lot of these games, but when we do get to watch some Western teams, a team that stood out to me at least was the Canucks and how dominant they were versus the New York Rangers and how just incredible they looked all game long. Has there been a team that stood out to you in the West, whether it be the Jets or the Canucks or anybody else that you're not only surprised, but you're genuinely scared of?
I'm going to say Colorado. Not the surprise factor, but the scared of factor. Like the Jets have been maybe the best surprise in the league, and great on them. And the Kings, I think, split with them earlier in the year. Colorado is interesting because the Kings have also split with the Avs. When the Avs big guys are going all together at once, they're close to unstoppable. Like I don't think that when you have Makar, Rantanen, and MacKinnon all playing at the top of their game, like that team's almost impossible to stop. We saw it when they beat the Kings. I think all three of those guys had 3+ points. Like when they're doing that, it doesn't matter who else is behind them. Like they're going to be in the game and they're probably going to beat you. So they're a team that probably can add to that core. Maybe they get Gabriel Landeskog back. And if they put all those pieces together and their three big guys are healthy and buzzing, that's, in my opinion, the team to beat in the West.
Zach, I'm always curious, when we bring people on that don't cover the New York Rangers, what their current opinion is of this team. Now, you live in a time zone where you could just watch 4 o'clock hockey if you so pleased. So I don't know how much of the Rangers you've seen, but what's the general opinion you have these days of New York? Where do they stand in the pecking order for you?
So I'm a little probably different than most because you guys know I'm from upstate New York. My dad, my family likes the Rangers. And a lot of my friends like the Rangers. So I probably hear more about the Rangers than I see. As of late, it's been the Rangers suck over the last week. Before that, it was like this team's pretty freaking good when they play the way that they should play. I've seen a handful of games this year. I like the Rangers a lot. I like the way that they've built the team. I like a lot of, not young players anymore, but I like those like mid-tier 23, 24, 25-year-old players that they have. I find myself really liking Hedl or, you know, Miller or Lindgren, like those kind of guys. I like the core that they've built there. So I've always been a person who feels the Rangers are in the upper echelon of the league. And when all of their pieces come together, I see them as one of the best teams in the East, but like I don't watch them day to day.
They are not healthy currently. Today will be Kapokako's first game in like a month and a half or something like that. And Filip Hedl is yet to return from concussion issues, is the speculation. So they're missing two serious middle six players. A lot of their depth pieces are injured. I think a lot of players are playing injured as well. So super fun times to be a Ranger fan when everything is going wrong and your goalies can't make saves. So that's where we're at now.
One of these teams has to win a game, right? One of these teams has to beat the other. And it'll probably be a loser point just because... For Greg.
It's going to be, well, I'll probably watch the game on Saturday night because I'm a psychopath, but it'll
be. Did you guys see that the Bruins had the chance to do the funny thing yesterday and have a 4-game road trip where they go 0-0-4?
How dare they not do it?
They won in overtime because Charlie McAvoy's a dick. But like, that's my point. The Bruins would have had a 4-game losing streak and they would have gotten half the points out of it. That's not normal. We shouldn't be living in this world.
You take a 2-2 trip, right? But you hate an 0-4 trip.
I would take a 2-2 trip immediately, but I guess it is the same amount of points. You're an insider. Where does Upstate New York start?
Upstate New York begins above Poughkeepsie.
I like that take.
I would say above Kingston, first of all, but if you can get there by train from New York City and it's not Amtrak, it's not Upstate New York. It just isn't.
Albany is upstate New York, correct?
Albany is upstate New York. I would maybe even say Albany is like the bottom. I might go, like, I was using major cities. I've always said Albany was the bottom, maybe a little bit lower than that, but it's just like, there's a lot of hours above Albany, a lot of hours, and people don't realize that.
Well, here's the real question to test your New York-ity, Zach. Syracuse, do you call that upstate New York?
I do not. I call that central.
There you go. Zach's a real one.
That's so upstate.
You know what's funny, though, is like Syracuse is in like the northern half of New York, but we can't comprehend that. We can't do the east, west, and north, south. So it's central New York. We have to leave it at that.
Very upstate. Incredibly so. Zach, thank you for taking the time today. Greg, do you have any final questions for our dear friend?
Yeah, Zach, has Marist ever asked you to come back to talk? Because
this is actually the best question.
No, they haven't. And you know what? I submitted my information into their alumni thing. It's like, oh, yeah, I'd do it. Never once. Haven't heard from them. But I also haven't donated one time.
Me either. Yeah, no way. I donated when I went there, Zach.
Yeah, I'm still – I'll take that back. I have donated several times, but it's just been to repay my education. I have not heard from them.
It would be really funny if we could do a panel one day. Like, here's three alumni that legitimately cover the NHL. Huh. How about only there was a way.
Zach,
the technology.
What's the best piece of wisdom I ever gave you when you were a young up-and-coming sports com major?
Don't listen to Greg. It might be good.
My favorite story with you was all I heard when I was trying to get into sports broadcasting was that Kaplan doesn't let younger guys do play-by-play. And then I showed up. It was my first game. We were calling freaking Marist baseball doubleheader. And then you were too hungover to do it. So you were just like, yeah, man, you just do the play-by-play. Like, I'll hang out on color. And I got to do play-by-play. And everyone's like, Kaplan let you do play-by-play? Like, yeah. And I think he had like 15 Bud Lights at Darby's the night before. So he couldn't handle the play-by-play duties.
Zach, I think I remember that game because you were doing play-by-play, and I think I was just reading you players drafted in the NFL draft.
You were the most off-topic color man of all time, and I remember that I got like the worst sunburn that I've ever had in my life. Like, if you pulled up the sleeve on my polo, it was like crayon white skin and then beet red arm. It was like a thermometer I looked after doing those games with you.
Yeah, I think when people – they think if you're doing play-by-play of a college baseball game, you're in a nice stadium, you're in a press box, you're kind of covered from the elements. When I say Marist's baseball field is literally uncovered outside, if you were doing it off a picnic table, that's not an exaggeration.
No, it was like, it's like a two chairs and a folding table that who knows how the equipment, you know, didn't get damaged over the years with these setups. Like, it rains once and the entire budget is gone.
D1 school, by the way, I'm pretty sure. So there
Division
you go.
One athletics. Hey, you know what? I watched the Foxes play basketball at Notre Dame a couple weeks ago. That was kind of cool. They played way closer than they ever did in the 4 years I attended there.
Our women's team is so bad now. It breaks my heart.
What happened? That was like all we had.
I know. George's retired last year. If I saw correctly, they got their third win of the season this weekend. We're down bad, man. We're the once proud franchise.
Third win of the season in January was like, oh yeah, the men's team. Like that's about when they would get their third win of the year. But the tables have turned for Marist basketball.
Yeah, you were, Zach, you were what, 2 years behind us, I think, right?
Yeah, I was 13.
So your freshman year was the infamous the men's team yeah. 1-24 season.
I didn't see a home win in person until like December sophomore year.
Did you guys rush the court?
There was only six of us there, so no.
Oh, shit.
We can end on this. The one regret I have is that, man, to this day, I wish the women's basketball team beat Oklahoma when they came
to the Gantt Center. Same.
Everyone was ready to run the court. Everyone. It would have been a zoo. Oh, it would have been so fun.
To this day, that's one of the coolest sporting events I've been to, was that Marist Oklahoma game. That was electric. And it was like, who was it? Was it Roethlisberger's sister who hit the three?
No, Olajuwon's daughter.
Olajuwon's daughter hit the three. It was like, we were right there. It would have been so great.
Unbelievable. Zach, I cannot thank you enough for taking your time today. Anything you would like to plug?
LAKingsInsider.com. I appreciate the page views. Don't actually read the stories. They're not that good, but the traffic helps.
Traffic helps. That's what we always say.
Hey, maybe we'll do this again in June. That'd be cool.
Hey, that'd be super fun. Let's cross our fingers, because right now, not looking that way. Zach, thank you so much. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, we're back. That was fun. Talked a lot of shit about Marist. Good times.
I don't know. We talk a ton of shit on air. I think we did that off
air. Oh, that was all off air. My apologies.
Yeah, no, all right. I'm happy Julie brought up that baseball game. I'm convinced that was the only baseball game I did while at Marist.
I believe you. Or maybe you just don't remember the other ones. There's a good chance.
No, I have a typically good memory when it comes to the game. I called so many basketball games that I don't remember every basketball game I called. But I think I only called one football game with your buddy Slaps. I only call him my buddy.
Hey, Slaps.
And then I called one volleyball game. That was an interesting experience.
And then, she serves.
I had no, because so volleyball is also one of those sports where it's kind of like tennis, where you can't be too talkative on the sideline. So it was I don't know why we did it on the radio to this
You're
day.
Kind of whispering.
It's like calling the Masters, except screaming in the background.
They're all screaming. Yeah. Okay. Fun.
Not a good, I'll put it this way, folks, not a good radio sport, but it was a challenge. It made me better in other aspects with other sports.
If you want to leave a 5-star question on the show, you go to our Patreon, become a subscriber today. Leave a 5-star question in the 5-star questions channel. Read it on the show. It's from Mr. Bang Bang. We find whoever is making that damn goalpost sound at MSG broadcast. I hope they step on a Lego in the middle of the night, the bathroom the rest of their life. Side note, can we get a weekly 2-minute segment where Ryan learns about the U.S. president? No, on the last one. And I would say, I think this is opposing goalies that end up hitting their stick on the actual goal.
I don't think it's just opposing goalies. I think MSG has mic'd the posts. So any movement in either crease is going to get a ping. But it's so annoying. It drives me up a wall.
This is from Greg's Bardildo. Is Cutter Gauthier now a top 5 player for Greg for the sole reason he didn't want to play for the Flyers?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's up there.
I did this on an OT where the reason I've always had a positive opinion of JD Drew is because he did the same thing.
This is from Charlied. Can you guys compare the defensive core of Henrik's years compared to the past few seasons? Stahl, Girardi, McDonough were such staples back there, and they seem to prevent most scoring chances from happening with little offensive ability. This D-core can put up points, but defensively seems weak. Weak might not be the right word, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts. It's two not only totally different styles of play, but the league has changed overall. It's not just that the Rangers defense is there. It's all defensive play has had to change because of the way the offensive game of the league has changed. Am I kind of on base there, Greg?
Yeah, I think as the game has evolved, we realize the most important thing a defender can do is start a breakout, and their ability to lead a transitional rush kind of doesn't trump everything they do in their own zone, but the most important quality a defenseman can have is preventing the puck from getting in their own zone, and the most effective way to do that is to have good puck handling skills and be able to move your team up the ice effectively, which, you know, that wasn't Mark Stahl or Dan Girardi or Kevin Klein's game. And the Rangers, the Rangers built a roster that was good at playing in front of Henrik Lundqvist and knowing they only needed three goals to win. And as much as we love Igor Shesterkin, I think this Ranger core understands the more goals, the better. So why not score as much as you can?
I guess kind of to ask you, we watch a lot of other teams as well. There's just not a lot of those particular defenders left.
No. Like the Victor Hedman is probably a dying breed at this point.
Jacob Trouba is probably the closest the Rangers have to that kind of player.
Yes. And even he's considered more of an offensive defenseman.
Despite his offensive game not flourishing in New York. Yes.
Well, it doesn't exactly have to. That's the beauty of it.
Right, because Adam Fox exists.
Yeah, like, there are no more Dustin Byfuglien's in the world. Dion Phaneuf is another guy. He's an endangered species. Yeah, I think when your Hedmans retire, I don't know. Because even a guy like Sergachev, he's a guy that tries to move the puck as quickly up the ice as humanly possible.
I mean, look at all the top defensemen in the league right now. Makar, Quinn Hughes. They are not Ryan McDonagh types.
Maybe Moritz Seider is a bit of an old school defenseman.
Even he has more offensive ability than those three guys.
Yeah, you just, when you think of the top defensemen, the Miro Heskinens, the Makars, the Quinn Hughes, you think of highly talented puck moving defense. Charlie McAvoy, same thing. Roman Josi. You know, this is the Erik Karlsson-ification of the NHL.
Yeah, and it's not, it's on purpose that defensemen aren't playing that way anymore, because they found out teams that do that do not win the same way when the other teams have more offensive ability. Yeah. The league is becoming more and more skilled. I'll compare it to the NBA real quick. The NBA 10 years ago, games were, you know, a high scoring game was like 110 to 107. Some teams are scoring 135 a night average right
now.
Well,
the NBA figured out that a 3-point shot is worth more than a 2-point shot.
Right, and the NHL has figured out that scoring goals matters a lot more, and the skill has become incredible.
The NHL has figured out that if you lead the league in blocked shots and hits, that means you lead the league in not having the puck.
Yes, so, which is Tortorella, you know, the style of play that he's now adjusted to over the years.
Yeah, that's like a big reason I cringe every time, because it gets brought up on any broadcast you listen to. You listen to the Rangers. I like you, listened to the NHL Network feed being out of New York yesterday. Everyone's like, boy, Nick Bonino leading the league in shots. And I'm just like, boy, Nick Bonino not having the puck a whole lot.
Yeah. Where's the puck? Oh, going against his body.
The Rangers don't have the puck and Nick Bonino's on the ice. That's interesting to me.
Turns out when you have the puck, you're more likely to win if you have the puck more of the time.
Wow. You know, Ryan, I think you really broke something there.
I did. This is from Inferno 272. Gun to your head. What's our lineup look like for game one of the playoffs, assuming no injuries in Kako and Hedl do come back? We can't do this right now because there's trades to be happening.
I think they have 11 of the 12 forwards they would like. If people think they're adding multiple forwards, I just think you're nuts.
I do. I think they're adding two.
No, I think you're nuts.
I guess if Hedl comes back, they cannot add two. They can add one.
I think even if Hedl doesn't come back, what we're talking about is if Hedl doesn't come back, you're going for one higher quality forward versus if Hedl does come back, you're going for one bottom six defensively minded forward.
If Hedl's back, he's on the third line. So the top line is as is right now. Kako on the top right. Let's just say no trades happen at all. The top two lines are exactly the same.
Yep.
Then it's Hedl, Cooley, VC.
No, I think that third Hedl, the line that's missing a piece is the third line, and you're either adding a center or a winger.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the fourth line becomes...
Or you're adding a top right winger for the first line, and Kako's going down the third.
No, I don't think you're at... I don't think you... Financially speaking, you're not adding that. And I also think we've seen the fit. I don't think you're tinkering too much with the top six at this point, now that it's back and healthy. And then your bottom line, it's going to be some combination of Gaudreau, Pitlick, Wheeler, and Bonino, and VC. You're going to be five guys for three spots.
Yeah.
That's a good problem to have, though.
Inferno also asked me to pronounce the name K-J-E-L-L, so Kajel? Kajel Samuelson?
No chance that's correct.
That's there's no chance. There's
I
no,
would say Shell?
Probably. Probably Shell.
I'm just thinking of Shea.
Brady Shea? Yeah. Shell. There's no S, though. All right. This James K. Poke, fucker, asks, so the Jimmy Howard question got me thinking the opposite. Is there a Rangers equivalent of David Price on the Red Sox versus the Yankees, a guy who is so bad against us he gets cheered at Yankee Stadium? I don't know if there's like a guy that we're so good against.
Carey Price never scared me, but I would never cheer if he was in the lineup.
Jari? Like...
No, because even Jari's had a couple games where he's looked
good. He's had a couple games where he's good, but...
This one's tough. I don't really know.
There's not a guy we own in that sort of way. But I'm sure other teams will say we own them, but we don't.
I've always been better at knowing what guys own me versus me knowing what guys my team owns.
Yep.
Like, I think there'll be nights in February where I just wake up at night and go... The Mets can't get a fucking hit off you, Darvish. Can't do it. I don't know what it is. They can't do it. Haunts me to this day. But I can't. Like, Alonso has ridiculous numbers, I think, in Philadelphia. But I never remember it until he shows up in Philadelphia.
Right. It's like, oh, he hits 350 here for no reason.
I think he might hit 500 in Philly.
That's insane.
Yeah, his numbers are absurd. I'm going to actually, while we're talking, I'm going to. Do a quick baseball reference here.
Sounds good. I would just say overall, I can't think of a goalie that we own in that way. There's just like teams overall, like the Hurricanes for a really long time, which the Rangers owned for about 10 years. They just never won. Things have changed, obviously, but it was just constant. That was the one team I could think of.
Oh, I've confused Philadelphia with Washington. In 77 career starts for Alonso, he's got 25 homers in Washington.
That is a nuts number.
He has a 10.51 OPS career in Washington. The only places he has a higher OPS are stadiums he hasn't played in more than 11 times.
This is from Jamie's. With the Royal Rumble coming up, which NYR player would most likely join the WWE? What would their walkout song be? Is Chris Kreider? Would just be Silent. I don't know.
Hold on. I'm stuck on Pete. I found a ballpark he crushes in more.
Okay, go for it.
I don't know what the Cubs ever did to Pete Alonso, but in 14 games, he has 8 home runs at Wrigley Field. With an 8.16 slugging percentage.
My man sees the ivy and just says, I need to hit that ball.
Which Ranger would do best in the Royal Rumble?
Or which would be most likely to join the WWE, and what's their walkout song?
So there are 3 schools of thought here. One is Chris Kreider. A school of thought. Forget it. Move on. 2 would be Jacob Trouba's more in the mold of your typical Vince McMahon era big guy.
Alexi Lafreniere feel like an AEW wrestler? I don't know why he feels that way.
Lafreniere?
Yeah.
No, he feels more AEW like a heel manager.
Yeah. Okay.
Like Matt Rempe would be prime for this, but he's not on the Rangers. So if it's not big body Jacob Trouba, you know, Adam Fox has a little like Adam Cole in him. I see some similarities.
Adam Fox, baby. This is from Jay White. Greg, with the Golden Globes done and the Oscars around the corner, what's your best picture this year?
I mean, Oppenheimer's the best picture I've seen, and I know I'm
probably going to win. It's a lock
for saying that.
Yeah,
I'll tell you the movie I'm most looking forward to, and I hope gets nominated because I haven't been able to see it yet. You heard of The Zone of Interest?
Never heard of it. Don't even know what it is.
It's a movie about a German family living outside the walls of Auschwitz.
Oh,
and like the father, I think, is a commandant at Auschwitz, and it's their experience of World War II. Dying to see it.
It sounds very hard to watch.
Yeah. Jeff has seen it and loves it, and I'm dying to see it. I also want to see Poor Things. That's getting a lot of good buzz. Was hoping to see it this week while I'm in Savannah. Savannah is not showing any good fucking movies down here, and it's really pissing me off.
Such an East Coast elite thing to show good movies. Jeez.
I know. And then American Fiction is another one that I'm really wanting to see that is getting re-released recently, but... Yeah, I'm a basic white bitch. Oppenheimer was the best movie I saw. I really liked Asteroid City, though. I don't
loved
think
Asteroid that's
getting enough buzz. I don't think it's going to get nominated, but it was fantastic.
We had 2 people ask, Nick D, and also I want to make sure C Nuggies. How far are we from the Trouba helmet throw again? I just don't think we're at that point. This team believes in themselves still. They're not frustrated.
I mean, they're frustrated, but
they're not down.
Yeah, they don't. It's last year Trouba didn't think the team was giving a shit. This year the problem isn't giving a shit. It's like they have moments where they get a little too frustrated for their own good and they make silly mistakes.
This is from Mike Koenig. Did Greg mean Troika instead of Triorca?
Troika instead of Triorca. Yeah, I fucked okay. up. And you didn't correct okay. me for it. So that's
bonus on question. Probably. How mad are you missing the chance to finally give Greg for mispronouncing something? I don't know. So it's hard for me to give him shit.
Yeah, I can say any word and you'll assume it's a word. Incorrect.
That's true. Is this from David? You were locked in a room with Henry Kissinger, John Franco, and Chase Utley. Who gets it first? It's probably Chase Utley for Greg.
I shoot Utley three times. I could take Kissinger. I don't need a gun for Kissinger.
Yeah.
Franco and I get drinks afterwards, man. I'm letting him out.
That's Franco for me. This is from talking to Seamus. Live Sports, ESPN Plus Originals, the complete 30-30 library, exclusive articles and stories. All right, that's the only question. This is from Tyler. I hate hockey and I'm not enjoying my winter sports. That being said, what has to change? I guess overall?
I don't know. You have to get a little luckier with these goalies.
Yeah, I would say like having an expected goal of 7 and probably scoring on some of those, like the finishing could be better, Tyler. There's a lot there for them to have, and they haven't been able to eat and finish their plate. Allie Rangers left like 3 different questions here, so I'm going to just read the first one. So many people on X/Twitter are angry, calling for trade moves, getting mad that moves haven't happened.
Actually,
I don't understand.
Before I finish that question, can I go on a little bit of a rant?
Yeah, please.
We as a society need to stop reacting to scouts being at games.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to throw someone under. I don't want to throw them under the bus, but one of our friends that I'm very close with, I interact with Twitter on a lot, was like, "Hey, I heard we have scouts of the game," and I'm like, "Dude, it does not matter. So, they're at every game, dude."
Remember, there are like, not only do the Rangers potentially want to maybe make a trade in the future, and that's true, the Rangers also have to play all these teams in the NHL, and in order to be best prepared to play specific teams in the NHL that are coming up on the Rangers schedule, you have to go see them play. That's the actual job of a scout. The Rangers being at Red Wings Maple Leafs doesn't mean the Rangers are definitely trading for one of the players on the Red Wings or the Maple Leafs. And everybody who wanted Daniel Sprong, need I remind you that the Red Wings are going for it this year? I don't know why they would trade Daniel Sprong when they are trying to win hockey games. I just want to stop. First of all, we need to stop tweeting that scouts are in attendance. I would assume a scout is at every game, hopefully, because the Rangers have the money for it. So it was a gotcha tweet, but then everybody overreacted to it thinking the trade was actually going to happen. Guys, the scout's doing his job. He had to go see the Red Wings, and he had to go see the Maple Leafs, because those are opponents coming up on the Rangers schedule.
And there was eight scouts there, and the reason there was 8 scouts there is because there was only 2 NHL games that night.
Yeah.
That's part of it.
Yeah.
It is. I think this is something that you and I, and I'm not trying to yell at everyone, we thought this was a big deal years ago. We're like, holy shit. At least I did. Holy shit. There's scouts at this game. There might be something up. And then we kind of got told in private, like, no, dude, there's scouts at every game. Like, don't read into this. So that's
I do want to say, Ryan, I think that one was a strictly you thing.
I remember 3 years ago, probably just me. I think you might have yelled at me at the time, but I was like, oh, there's scouts in this game. Something might be happening. And then I talked to a bunch of smart people in the NHL, and they were like, nah, dude, every game has a ton of scouts at it. Literally yeah. everyone.
And this, listen, I'm not saying the Rangers for sure 100% won't make a trade with either the Red Wings or the Maple Leafs, but it's also the inverse where maybe the Maple Leafs or the Red Wings have asked the Rangers about a certain player. So then they send a scout over there to be like, well, if you want him, we want X. But could be millions of reasons why a scout is at a game. The real reason why a scout is at a game is because it's his fucking job. It's not because they're making a trade.
Allie's question is, in summary, I'm not going to read the whole thing. Is she dumb for thinking that Drury is smart for not making moves yet? Or are people on Twitter being mad and dumb that he hasn't? Allie, it is the latter. Welcome to hell. And don't worry. Most teams don't make trades till almost the deadline because of the financials. and people just get angry and want to trade players that are very good for very little for players who can't play very quickly because it makes them feel better.
But also, and that is again the biggest reason why a big trade hasn't happened yet is we've only played half the season, and most teams don't actually know what their biggest need is yet.
Yep.
We know the Rangers need a forward. We still don't know what type of forward the Rangers need because we have this big old injured question mark in Phil Hedel.
And Ali asks, rather says, to clarify, it's not that I don't think there are things to fix. I just don't see why you'd fix them right now without being to do real cap math and without knowing what the team's buyers and sellers are. But what the hell do I know? Ali, you know a lot. Congratulations.
Yeah. You
nailed
fix,
it.
You might have an internal fix as well. Someone might catch fire that you least expect. Did you think at this time last year that Jimmy Vesey would be a super important New York Ranger moving forward, Ryan?
This time last year? We're getting there. Not yet. Very close. Very close. From Remy, what are the red flags going into the second West Coast trip minus the Seattle game on Tuesday? A lot of us won't be able to stay up and watch them.
Yeah, yeah. Puck drops after 10 o'clock. That's a red
flag. Yeah, 10:30 games for the Kings. That's the red flag. Obviously, the Seattle Kraken had a 9-game win streak. They lost. They've since lost. I think the Rangers are, by the way, favored. This is not an ad drop, but might as well say it. They're favored versus the Seattle Kraken. Seemingly, the sports books and obviously the bettors still think the Rangers are the better team, despite the recent run for the Seattle Kraken. They probably are the better team. The Rangers tend to do pretty well on West Coast trips. I don't know why. They tend to get regrouped and do pretty well. I don't know if Jacob Trouba is going to make the trip, at least at first. They did just have a newborn child. It wouldn't surprise me. And then Zach Jones might. One of my concerns is that Jones and Schneider, whenever they get started, they usually get exposed for at least a game or two. So that might be a case.
Yeah, I got no red flags. Again, it's not that we're not frustrated or weren't frustrated during the 4-game losing streak. I just didn't think the ceiling was falling in on me either.
Yep. It's from Michael Sen, 816. Final question. Rank these New York player acquisitions from most bad to least bad. Carl Pavano, Jacoby Ellsbury, Kaz Matsui, Jason Bay, and Eddie Curry.
Most bad was Ellsbury because I think Ellsbury legitimately prevented really good Yankee teams from making additional moves.
And they paid him a lot for a long time.
Yeah.
So not only just really good Yankee teams, but teams that probably could have been good, but couldn't because Jacoby Ellsbury was there.
Second bad is Jason Bay, because not only was he bad with the Mets were given a choice to sign either Bay or Matt Holliday, and they made the wrong choice.
Am I wrong to think that Eddie Curry is last place here?
Yeah, I think Curry, the Knicks gave up way too much. The trade itself was bad, but Curry had a couple good years with the Knicks.
And also the Knicks, like, even if Curry was really good, they weren't doing anything.
No. They lost a lot. The problem why they weren't doing anything is the draft picks they gave up to get Curry.
I understand, but they were cursed at the time.
Yeah, I mean,
it doesn't matter.
I'd put Pavano third, just because so bad from the jump.
You know, I don't remember the Kaz acquisition.
Well, I remember it because the Mets thought Matsui was going to be his great big thing, and Jose Reyes was going into his second season, and the Mets moved Reyes off shortstop to make room for Matsui. Reyes immediately gets hurt in making the transition to second base, and then Matsui himself stank. So I get it. But, you know, that was just money. I'm not really worried about – the Mets didn't give anything up to get Kaz Matsui, and Jose Reyes eventually became a really good baseball player. So I don't put that one lightly. But, yeah, Curry was – injured a lot with the Knicks. He had, I think, 2 fine seasons, but they gave up so many lottery picks for Curry, where I get it. It's not great.
That's the show. Stay tuned. We'll be back with BSBOT later this week, probably Wednesday, if I had to guess.
You don't want to do late night version after a game?
No. So probably after the Kraken game on Wednesday, we'll do something. Who knows? But stay tuned. We'll be back next week. Love you guys. Talk to you then. Bye. Hey, it's the end of the show, so you know what I do here. I misread names. That's right. Ryan Mead and reading names, not a good combination. We do it every end of the episode. Why do we do it? Because this episode and all episodes are not possible without our top Patreon supporters, and actually all of our Patreon supporters, if I'm being frankly honest with you. But without further ado, here's our NHL Insider Club members, who I spend most of the day talking to every single day, and who've become actually really good friends of mine. Adam Cassidy, Adam Cohen, Adam Curtulo, Adam Keach, Alex Flynn, Alex Carter, Amber Cohensberger, Andrew Rauner, Anthony Gray, Anthony Monturo, Anthony Tenegretta, really good friends of mine who I still can't pronounce their name. Ari Zanger, Ben Waters, Ben Weber, Bill Allison, Bill Rattel, Brandon Lackos, Brendan Magnum, Brooke Granger, Britt McGinnis, Brian Doherty, Brian Doyle, Brian Gallagher, Brian Mallon, Brian Farrell, Cassidy, Rollman, CJ, Chris Finelli, Chris Howard, CJ Stellwag, and Cognitive Damage, Daniel Delaney, Daniel Dizan, David Narodin, David Siegel, DJ Benanjaz, Dylan Brettschneider, Eric Stagg, Garrett Rance, Gretzky McFly, Harrison Haskell, Hill Vanilla, Hip 89, Jack Bagley, Jack Rogan, Jack Keith, James Masker, Jerry and Marquez. Going to the next page. Jason Stumer, Jason Zabrowski, Jimmy Mack, John Hardesty, John Shea, Johnny Thundercock, Jordan, Josh Kestebaum, Josh White, Christopher Florida, Cried or Die, Lee Plummer, Leszek Gronowski. Whoa, did I just mess it up? Leszek. Why did I say it? That was weird, man. Oh, I hate myself so much. Leszek Gronowski. Lou Giordano, Matthew Goodwood, Matthew Kine, Meatball the Cat, Michael Koenig, Mike Bucklaw, Mike Mancuzu, Mike Pasternak, Nate Hanafy, Neil Grover, Ponsor Perez, Nicholas Tinicola, other slash Pascal Perrier, Apologia Smith, Pavel Kodarev. That's how you don't say it, that's not as right. Hey, Pavel, good luck in your next endeavor, man. I really appreciate you. Phoenix Edition, PJ Cisbaro, Randy Tesser, Ryan Watch Miracle, yes. Swingart, The Drop BK, Tommy Sinclair, Tommy Dadeshi, Tommy O'Neill, Tony Gregory, Tori from Manhattan, Vinny Bracco, Will Spector, and Winston, the Golden Retriever. Bark to bark, 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 bark. End of the episode. Oh, man. It's just funny to watch Ranger games when just things aren't going right. They're so much more stressful than they need to be. I was talking to Connor about this on Twitter. It's like, dude, I was ripping my hair out watching that game on Sunday and Saturday. Just like, this is supposed to be my enjoyable time. And yet, January Ranger games are making me sweat and throw things and complain. And people tell me regular season hockey doesn't matter. And I probably say it to you sometimes. Just make it to the playoffs and get from there. But some of those games are just so frustrating. Oh, my God. It's only frustrating because I think this team is really great. Not only 2 weeks ago was I coming on this podcast and saying, this team needs to do it. They need to. Right now, there's some things to address. We mentioned them on the show. So let's see how the next couple weeks play out. Good luck staying up this week. There's a lot of late games, so that'll be fun. I will definitely stay up for the Saturday night game. The Thursday night game, probably not going to make it. Turns out I have to work on Friday. Who knew? So we'll see there. Anyway, love you guys. Hope you guys had a wonderful, hopefully long weekend. If you haven't, if you get some rest soon. And we will talk to you guys later in the week on BSBOT. Wednesday afternoon. There you go. All right, love you guys. Bye.